Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm your host, Shaney, and this is the Leadership Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet, and we make the long-awaited shift from rhetoric to results. I promise I'm not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you get your shift together. Let's do this. Welcome, Leadershifters, to another episode of the Leadership Show. I'm your host, Shaney, and it is one of my biggest joys today to introduce you to today's guest, Paige Morrow Kimball. Say hello, Paige.
Hello, Shaney. Hi, everybody.
So, Leadershifters, you're gonna want to eat up everything Paige has to say today. First of all, let me give you a little background on Paige. Paige is one of my dearest girlfriends. We met when I moved to Los Angeles in 2000. And frankly, when I moved to LA, she was my only friend that was kind of in the biz, in the film business. Because I was mostly still socializing with finance types and legal types. And so it was really fun to get to know Paige. Back then, Paige, you were producing primarily, right? And since then, Paige has... So I probably won't get all of these. Producing, directing, writing, acting. Am I missing any of the?
That's all for the main stuff, except you missed mom.
Oh, I was just going to say that just in film. And then I was going to say, aside from that, super mom, super wife, like very involved. Like, and when I say super mom, I really mean it. Her two daughters, who are like nieces to me, are some of the most well-behaved children I've ever met, and they are going to make amazing adults.
That is so nice of you, because they're now teenagers. You haven't seen them in a while. Well, I have one tween, 12 going on 13.
Right.
And things, they're not so well-behaved anymore, Shaney. You'll have to come over for dinner. In there, I know it.
Well, last time I was over for dinner, I helped... Mackenzie with her earth science homework. That was, I think, just last year. So, but yes.
Can you come back with your homework?
Yes. Sick. I know. It was probably a nice breath of fresh air for you and Dave to delegate the homework to Aunt Shaney.
It really was.
Yeah. So point is, Leadershifters, Paige is one of these people who has done a bunch of things, continues to juggle a hell of a lot of balls, and is making big impact in the world. And I'm going to let Paige tell her story, but one of the things that has in recent years, there's lots of things that have impressed me over the years, but in recent years, here's a place where Paige has really started to make a shift, and that is in how women are treated in Hollywood. And this precedes the Me Too movement. So Paige started making films for women, by women, with women stars, with female topics, with female leads, before this became a thing and before she had the Me Too movement behind her. And so one of the things that I think you're really going to get out of this podcast, whether you're a woman or anybody else who feels like you are facing headwinds in your industry, is what can you do even if you don't have the Me Too movement or something like it behind you? So let's get to some chatting, Paige.
Oh my goodness, that was a really nice introduction. Yeah,
well deserved.
Where do I start? I mean, I guess, would you like to hear my story, kind of how I evolved into?
Absolutely. Let's hear, you know, sort of Reader's Digest version, how you got into the business, and sort of how you shifted from directing to all of the other things. But I totally want to focus on, after we get the bio, on some of the more recent things, because, you know, some of the movies you've been making are just incredible.
Well, okay, so I would say I was always a storyteller. Growing up in Brooklyn, my dad, who was actually, his job was in radio. He's a famous radio personality, he goes by the moniker Cousin Brucey.
That's yes, my New dad. York Leadershifters, you probably know Cousin Brucey.
Brucey's daughter, that's me, daughter of. Yep. But the cool thing that people may not know about my dad is that his hobby was filmmaking. So he had, in our Brooklyn apartment when I was a tiny little girl, you know, 5 years old, I can remember, he had these film equipment, celluloid, 16 millimeter cameras, and a Steenbeck in the closet. So we would, every weekend, whenever I saw him, which was not often because he worked nights, but on Sundays, every week we would make movies together on celluloid. So for me, making movies meant more time with my dad. So it was just ingrained at a very young age. It was a love and a passion. And I've always been a storyteller. One of the Great Cookie Bake, starring my brother. So I then went to NYU. I worked for directors Sidney Lumet and Woody Allen, which that's an interesting one in terms of the, you know, Me Too movement now.
Yes.
But he's such a great filmmaker.
Yeah.
It was a privilege to watch him work in those days. I did that and then got into documentary television. I worked for an Olympic documentarian named Bud Greenspan, who was a wonderful filmmaker and great, great leader as well. I went into television. I worked for Oprah Winfrey. I produced. I was a field producer and director for her. And I also was a field producer for shows like Project Greenlight, Fox's Boot Camp, and many more over the years. When I had my children, and my oldest daughter was born in 2003, I thought I wouldn't miss a beat. I was at the height of my career. I was supervising, producing. I was, you know, multitasking, everything. And then she was born, and I started to get jealous of my nanny, which was sort of a wake-up call at that time. What am I doing? So I took some time off and to kind of stop for a bit and be a mom and also see how I fit into the world now. Because at the time, reality television was just 6 days a week, brutal hours. 16 hours was a normal day.
Yep.
And just felt like I couldn't find the balance. And the balance has always been very important to me. So I stopped. I had my second daughter. And then I started acting in my late 30s. And people thought I was nuts, but I loved it. It had been something that I always enjoyed doing, but because I had to make money and because I was, you know, had this passion for behind the camera, it's something I didn't pursue. So to be able to pursue it was a really incredible shift. It informed my directing. It informed my storytelling.
Right.
And such a passion. I enjoyed it. And the hours were great because you just don't work that much as an actor, actress, whether you're Emma Stone or me, you know, a fledgling.
Right. Actor. And I remember when you were going through that, because one of the great thing was you didn't have to be an actress, right? Like you got to be an actress. And there was something about how you showed up energetically to your auditions where there was like, no, like I can't pay my rent unless I get this commercial. And I feel like you had so much success back then because there was just no attachment to it.
I think that's so true. I think it's, you know, a bit of beginner's mind, you know,
yeah. And
the energy that you walk into a room with absolutely informs how you present yourself, how you're perceived in that room. And desperation is not my best suit.
I don't think it's anybody's best suit.
But I do know this about myself.
Yeah.
So I started booking. I was the mom. I was booking commercials and doing independent films and building a reel, you know, just bird by bird, as Anne Lamott would say.
Love that book.
I love that book too, but it's so true because it's just one, I would say, it was almost like a deposit in the bank. Each audition was like just a deposit, one deposit in the bank. And then if you got enough of those, you'd book one. And so many life lessons about being an actor, you know, that pertain to life and everything else that I do, like being in the moment and, you know, one step at a time and all these things about acting that I think are true in many, many fields.
Yeah.
So I got to the point now entering my 40s where I had some successes under my belt and it's done some films and commercials and stuff, but I was noticing there was less opportunity for me as an actress of a certain age. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to create some films, and having the skills, having the knowledge, I also wanted to help myself get into the union, into SAG.
Sure.
So I found this loophole that said, if you have an online web series, webisode, and you have one SAG actor, you can Taft Hartley all the other non-union actors into the union for free.
Oh, nice.
Because online stuff was so new then.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. I got my SAG actress and I started my actress friend who's SAG, and myself and another woman. We were the non-union ones, and we created this video that was called "Oh My God, I'm Knocked Up." It was the first thing I did. I acted it, I directed it, I wrote it, and I just started kind of with what I had. You know, like, what do I have? I have a Pilates studio. What's funny that could have in a Pilates studio? Pregnant woman, you know, giving birth on a reformer. So that became one. And it was the most fun. I mean, I look at it, it's kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe I made that now. But it's on Funny or Die. You can see it if you want. I think it's pretty funny. It doesn't, it should have been like a little shorter. But anyway, it was a super fun experience. And what it did was it reminded me of these skills and these tools that I had. Those never go away. You know, they right. just shift into the next place. I love that word, shift.
Yeah. Good. Well, so let's talk about how you tried to create a shift in the film business. As you alluded to, you found that there were fewer opportunities for you as a female actress or actor, and then were able to combine your all of your other film experience to start writing, producing, directing your own films. And I remember this so vividly when you were telling me about it, and you started writing blog posts about it, and you're like, you know what, if there aren't a whole lot of films created by women, written by women, directed by women, starring women, I'm a filmmaker, I'll do some.
Make them. Yeah. I mean, that was it. It just gave me, it felt important to me at the time. It felt important that women had more opportunities. There was a study that Gina Davis, she's an institute, that, you know, looked at media, girls in media, and it was 17% of every background scene you see, 17% women represented. We're 51% of the population. There's only 17% of us. What does that tell you? You know, or like cop would be cast male, you know, teacher might be cast woman, but it was a very like strong message that we were sending. So what I tried to do is think out of the box of what women could be, and could they be cops? Could they be, you know, how you cast is so important. Even background, you know, even like who's in the background and what are the things. So I started creating films and I started writing about it. You were awesome and introduced me to the people at Huffington Post. And so started writing articles for them and for another organization called Women's Voices for Change, just about my experience as a woman in Hollywood and as a woman, you know, in her 40s. That needed more opportunities because the stories were just not being told about us. They were being told about the ingenues, you know, so you went from ingenue to grandma, and in between you were nowhere. So you
right. had to come and, say, and what? We're the most fucking fantastic age that there is in our, you know, 20s and 30s.
Yeah. In our 40s and
I know. Still in denial now.
I think we're a bit in denial, but
yeah.
I think we have to embrace who we are. I think I'm so damn happy to be here and so feel so fortunate each day, you know, to have the life I have and to be able to express my creative work in the way I can, you know?
Absolutely. And so I'm guessing you experienced a lot of the same things that we heard about Harvey Weinstein, and just as of a few days ago, now Les Moonves from CBS, I mean, the dominoes keep falling with the Me Too movement. Yeah. So what advice do you have for people, again, not just in Hollywood, but in any industry? Because women are still facing an uphill battle in just about every industry outside of teaching and nursing, probably.
Probably even in that industry.
Yeah, right.
I think, you know, it's so hard to give advice because, I mean, we all lived it, you know, and it was, we just accepted it, you know, and now we're seeing outside of that box we were put in, you know, coming up in the entertainment industry, New York, and then here, I just got used to it. And it was just something that I accepted and just rolled with. But I always knew who I was.
Okay.
And I think that's the best advice. Just know who you are, no matter what someone else does. If you think it's wrong and it doesn't feel good, it probably is wrong and it shouldn't feel good.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, empower yourself through that knowledge. Because what can you do really? I mean, it's such a difficult thing. You want to succeed, you want to do well. I mean, so you can't really stop it, but you cannot partake in it. You can say, no, not for me. I mean, I was in situations where I said, no, no, thank you. That's not, it's not, there's nothing in it for me is what I said. And I was in my 20s at the time, propositioned by a man. And I knew it could help, I guess, potentially my career, but it just wasn't for me. So knowing who I was and standing in that power and saying it to that man, this, there's nothing in it for me. Thank you. I'm flattered. There's nothing in it for me.
Right. Really? And then just going about and doing your thing, doing the best that you can at what you do.
Yeah. I think in life, there's always a sense that you have to get somewhere, succeed somehow. There's always something further. And really, it's right here. You know, I mean, that's what's cool about where we are in life, Shani. It's like we have the perspective of a past, but also like the future and knowing there's so much possible. It's not so definitive and nobody else can control that for you.
Yep. And what's been your, what's been the reaction that you've received from women and men to your films that you have written, directed, produced with female protagonists?
Well, after I did that first one that I told you about, I'm Funny or Die, I went on to do three or four others. Ending Up was a film about starting over in the middle, about four best friends and after divorce and kind of where they are now in the middle and reinvention. Then I did a film, it was fun. Then I did a film called Play Date, which is about homelessness, a little girl discovering a homeless woman in her backyard. And when she invites her inside, her parents don't notice because they're distracted on their devices. So again, women-centric, female-centric messages and diverse cast, which I also love to do. And then I did a series called Exiled Out East that I was hired to do as a consultant and a director. And again, strong woman, party planner, you know, loses her career and has to climb her, social climb her way back to the top. And then making films now for Sesame Street. And that's been great too for children, you know, because I love that space as well. So my films and the messages, how were they received? I think people really responded. I think male and female really responded. I just wanted to tell our stories. And like you had said, we're so deep and interesting, you know, so there were good stories for everyone to watch, you know, the films that I've made. Right now I'm working on another one called Late Bloomer, mother-daughter relationship in the 1970s. And we're looking forward to shooting that this spring.
Excellent. And that one's a bit semi-autobiographical, yes?
Definitely semi-autobiographical, for sure. Yeah, I grew up, you know, up in the Catskills where it takes place. So a lot of it is stuff that really happened to me.
Yeah good. I can't wait for that one.
Yeah.
Let's actually spend a little bit more time on Play Date, because that one, you won a lot of awards for that. I know you've been in multiple film festivals, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like you got invited to so many with that film. And so let's start there. So obviously the reaction to that was great. What were some of the doors that opened for you because of Play Date? And then I want to talk about homelessness in general and the messaging there, but let's start with.
So exciting, because I just felt that this message was so important to me to get out. It was like social injustice that I see every day here in LA. I'm sure you see it too, everywhere, Canada, it's everywhere, sadly. But I needed to express it. And I think I remember just standing in my kitchen one day when I'd written the script. The script was written, I should say, because I just passed by Skid Row and just witnessing all these people with no homes and setting up their tents. It just, the script poured out of me. But there was a day in my kitchen, and it's always really frightening when you're launching something new. In your industry, it's the same, but you're about to shoot this. You're about to take all this money that was crowdfunded from all your friends and circles, work circles, everybody believing in you. And what if you mess up? What if it turns out terribly? And I stood in my kitchen that day humbly, and I just like sort of talked to the higher power, God, whatever you want to call it, Allah, Buddha, all of it, and said, just use me for my greatest good. Use my talents for the greatest good that I can do. And that was enough, you know? And I think that really gave that film a specialness, because I just saw the film so clearly and saw the message. And as a result, it was just so well received. People really responded to it. It won many awards at the festivals it played in. And it was so fascinating to see an audience of adults and children communicating and talking and sharing their feelings about the homelessness issue. Because usually it's something that people just don't know how to deal with, and we just want to, you know, sweep it under the rug.
So right.
Because it's overwhelming, you know.
For sure.
Themed about our own reactions, I think.
Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about the movement in LA that the film generated, because after it came out and I mean, it was so well done, and obviously the message, who can't relate, right? To we see homelessness pretty much everywhere we go, especially in the major cities. And one of the things that delighted me in the aftermath of Playdate was there was a curriculum created. And so tell me what transpired there, because here again, big overwhelming issue, yet I as one person, you as one person, what can we do, right, to help create shift? Because it's going to take a lot of people rowing together, and individually, no one person's going to fix homelessness, but you created some huge shift, even just in your community.
Right. Well, I think, you know, just when you come together and talk about it as a community, I think you can make incredible change. So one of the things that the program does is suggest that, you know, you watch the film, you talk about the issue, you're open about your feelings, and then you do something together to create change, like putting, you know, creating backpacks with, you know, hygiene kits, you know, that kind of thing. Doing lunches, when you're a group and you put lunches together, it's really empowering, because you see how fast it goes and how much change you can create when we come together about issues we care about.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, like, again, that one I was a little bit ahead of the curve. You know? Well, because I think I see something that's not right, or I feel it and I want to do something about it. I want to fix it. And then it definitely is something that needs fixing. So I think other people catch on in the world, and not just from my own work, certainly, but just it's sort of in the zeitgeist, you know? So I created an education program from the film. I just feel when I saw how children were reacting to it, especially children like who are in middle school, I saw, and very much like Parkland, the Parkland kids in Florida, mm-hmm. you know, these are the people that are going to make the change, not necessarily our generation. We can plant the seeds, but they're going to grow later.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make sure that they were feeling empathy, because with empathy is power. And I felt the empathy was getting lost, because what are the messages we give to our kids? Like, we pull their arm away. There's a scene right in the front where it's actually my daughter and myself in the scene. And she goes to the playground swing where the homeless individual is sitting on the screen, on the swing, and the mother pulls the daughter away, because we were like, oh, no, don't go near there. That's not clean. That's not good. Right. That's not. So the messages that we're unwittingly giving to our children are that of, don't deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
They're not human. They're, you know, every one of us has a story, and many of the people who are homeless at this moment just are down on their luck, you know, and they need hope and they need opportunity. And I think it's changing, you know, in the world. I see it a little bit. It's starting to shift here, because we have to do something about it. There was $1 billion raised, allocated towards homelessness in Los Angeles.
Mm.
Slowly, I see it at work, but man, it's, you know, it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it is. And what I love is it's something that really struck a chord with you, and you did something using the skills that you are so good at, right? So you didn't just like go picket somewhere or come home and bitch to your husband. Like, you did something, you made a difference, and you did it in your sandbox, right?
And that was the talk with the, you know, my own power in the kitchen that day. You know, how can I use my skills and what I know how to do to create positive change?
Yeah.
That's when you're truly alive, as you know, Shani. It's when you're helping others, when you're teaching, when you're taking your talents and putting them to good. That's the real joy, you know?
Absolutely. And that's your superpower. So leader shifters, what is an issue that you're passionate about that gets under your skin and you're tired of the frustration and the powerlessness that comes with seeing it so ubiquitous out there? What's your superpower? What's something you can do where you have a strength, where you can make a difference and send a message that can resonate with many people? And it doesn't have to be millions of people or even thousands of people, but just more than just a one-on-one. Because that's what it's going to take, is more people sending more messages, and we have the benefit of being connected to everywhere in the world. And these messages go farther than we may think. Like, I don't know if you have the statistics, but I bet your movie Playdate has been watched in more places than you could ever imagine.
And right now we're just about to launch this ed program, and it's another uphill battle. It's not easy. It's not, people aren't going, yes, bring it. I want it. I want it. They say that, but then actually getting to them, and you know, people are so busy. We're all consumed. So it's the next phase. Okay, how am I going to get this distributed? You know, as an ed program, as something that can help your community. You know, how am I going to get it to companies? Because honestly, it's also for communities. It's not just for schools.
Sure.
How do we have empathy, and what can we do as individuals? And
right.
But every little bit of it is another battle.
Yeah.
But I just know enough to know, if I just start one day at a time, I will get there. If I give enough time to it, little by little, it will get there.
Yeah. So is that the advice that you would give to people? Because what you just said a couple sentences ago is that we're all so busy. And I hear that from clients all the time. Like, yeah, I would like to do that, but I'm too busy. Well, if we're all too busy to do shit that matters, like, why are we here? So what advice do you have for people who say, oh, you know, that's great that the people like Paige can produce movies and create educational curriculum, but I'm too busy?
Well, first of all, I would tell them, don't use the B word. I don't even say the word busy, although I did say it, I'm here. But in my daily life, I really try not to use that word about myself. Like, oh, I'm too busy. You know, I think take that out of your vocabulary. That's number one. And number two, I think there's some things you can't deny. If you're moved, you know, it's like getting struck by lightning.
Mm-hmm.
And it just creates a whole, it really does, it can shift your life. Be open to what that is. And it may not look like mine.
Yeah.
But it can look like yours, and it can be so powerful. Go with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. And I like saying to people who say I'm too busy, for especially when they're talking about things that are really important, it's like, no, you're not too busy for anything. Mm-hmm. We're just not prioritizing it. Like, if we're saying we're too busy, we're saying it's less important than the other things that we actually are committing time to. So I think a lot of people need to just look themselves in the mirror and ask themselves, like, how am I spending my time? Go to your calendar. And I have clients do this sometimes, like do a spreadsheet and really pay attention to how you're spending your time versus how you'd like to spend your time. And you'd probably be fairly apoplectic at how we're actually spending our time versus aspirationally how we'd like to spend our time. And the choice lies with us to make a shift in how we're allocating our time and to make time for things that matter.
I think you're so right. And I think, like, the first thing I did when I started, you know, when I stopped using the B word, was I noticed how many people use it. How like, just listen to how many people in your one day say, I'm too busy. I'm so busy. Listen, you will be astounded. It's sort of like become part of our culture.
Yeah, it's like a badge of honor. Who's busier than the next person?
That's it. And what are you busy doing? Yes, we're busy, but yes, we are. But what are you doing? And it's so, what I started doing, which has really made a huge shift for me, is I started getting up at 5 a.m. before anybody's up, and it's dark out. And by the way, this is not natural to me. I'm much more of a night owl, but I needed those 2 hours to write in the morning. So I write from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. And then I'm done, and I can get my kids off to school. I can work out. And then I do all the B be work that, you know, distracts me from my creative and what's pulling me now. So that's been a very positive shift. So I would find those 2 hours or whatever it is, even if it's 10 minutes, to carve out, to build from.
Right. I mean, when you read articles about the habits of some of the most successful people in the world, that's what they all say is get up earlier than everybody else and get shit done before you're distracted.
That's the thing. I get so distracted. I think creatives get very distracted. I mean, it's tough. And the onslaught of marketing emails. I mean, one of the things you wrote about in your book that I love, Shani, was the thing about, like, don't use your email inbox as your to-do list.
Yeah.
Because I do, because that's other people's agendas is what you said. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's right. I'm being marketed at. This is not my thing. So I let it get filled up. And then I carve out just that time in the day when I'm not being creative to kind of clean it out and go through it. And I press delete and I unsubscribe so much more. So I don't put my to-do list in my email anymore. I calendar it now.
Oh, good. I'm so thrilled to hear that you get that little nugget away.
That's a good nugget.
Yeah. Love that. Good. Well, Leader Shifters, if you want more about that, the Better Boss Blueprint is available for sale on Amazon. So sadly, we need to wrap it up because we have covered pretty much most of what I think we wanted to talk about. But let's just before we go, how can Leader Shifters reach you if they want to understand more about any of your films or get involved in any of the homelessness things you're up to? I mean, I definitely have Leader Shifters in LA who perhaps would want to collaborate. So how can people reach you and find all of your creative work?
That would be great. I'd love to collaborate. All my work is available on, well, first of all, Playdate is available on Amazon right now for viewing. So is Ending Up, so you can buy it on Amazon. You can also see my work, my reel, and read a little bit about me on PaigeMorrowKimball.com. Mm-hmm. And Playdate Film Education Program is about to launch, and that is PlaydateFilm.com. Just getting the website up and running, so it's very exciting, and you can shop, you know, buy, you can license the film through, and the program through that website, which is probably very, very soon.
Fantastic. That's going to be huge because I'd love to see that education program outside of LA in the other 49 states and around the world.
I really hope so. That's my goal. That's my dream. And you can contact me through the website.
Okay, good. So Leader Shifters, I hope you found this as inspiring as I have for many years that I've been friends with Paige and following her career. Wow. Some terrific points today. I mean, from like, hey, what do you do if you are experiencing a Me Too moment? It in any industry, it's like, hey, I'm flattered, nothing in it for me. I'm not interested. And go and do your thing, right? Just continue to do what you know to be the right thing and you can sleep at night, right? Because we can't change other people, right? Not to say that we are permitting it or letting it pass, and then instead do the sorts of things that Paige did, which is find those issues about which you're passionate and use your own superpower to create change and shifting the conversation in ways that only you can do and only you know how you can do that, which means you got to find the time to do that. So get rid of the B word, right? B-U-S-Y is a four-letter word, right? We're going to add busy to the realm of four-letter words at Paige's Advice. I love that.
A chapter for your next book.
Yeah, and instead, figure out how do you want to spend your time more meaningfully and get rid of the bullshit. So any other last words you'd like to share with Leader Shifters about all of the things that we've talked about, the missions that individually people can be up to shift before their time or along with a movement?
Just, I guess one thing I've been thinking about a lot lately is things don't always happen when you want them to. But with perspective, comes the ability to see that you're not above the bad things from happening, and you're certainly not above the good things from happening to you. So it's about persistence, building bird by bird. And, you know, I always say this industry that I'm in, especially as a woman, is like climbing a rock wall. You know, you're holding on by your fingertips and it's greased with Crisco. And every once in a while, you're going to slide back down. But you just keep going. If you love it and you have passion for it, just don't look at the goal as having a time limit, or sometimes it doesn't happen the way you think. Just know, okay, I did it. I have that behind me, and you know, I have building the foundation for the next thing.
Right.
And yeah, I feel very fortunate to have enough, you know, knowledge now, have enough perspective to have this knowledge.
Right.
And not worry so much.
Yeah.
Don't worry, be happy. Right. Don't be busy, be happy.
Don't be busy, be happy. That's genius. Don't be busy, be happy. I think that needs to be a new reggae song. Don't be busy, be happy. Okay, Leadershifters, thank you so much for tuning in today with Paige and myself. It was a pleasure to have you as always. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Leadershift Project. In the meantime, you can reach us at hello@theleadershiftproject.com or hit us up anywhere on social media. Mwah.